Dogs make the best companions for humans. This podcast aims to help make humans better companions for their dogs. Welcome to the Beru Podcast, a modern lifestyle podcast for dogs and their people. I'm your host, Charlotte Bain. I've been caring for other people's dogs for more than 15 years. And while I've learned a lot in my career, I definitely don't know it all. So I've collected an ever-evolving roster of amazing dog people, and I learn new things from them all the time. Hi, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Beru Podcast. Today, certified professional dog trainer Irit Bloom is back to chat about puppies. We chat about what we should expect from our puppies at their various life stages and how we can be more mindful of the expectations that we place on our puppies and on ourselves during this joyful and sometimes very challenging time of pet guardianship. All right, let's listen. So happy to have you back on, Irit. I really wanted to focus on puppies today because I wanted to focus on setting our puppies up for success for the future, kind of those first 12 months, how we can set them up for success. And I also really wanted to talk about how we can be more mindful about the expectations we have of our puppies, right? Like what they're actually capable of when it comes to learning, when it comes to behavior at all of those life stages, because I feel like people get really frustrated or there's a lot of questions like, why is my dog sleeping so much? Or he won't listen to me, or he keeps peeing in the house, you know, all those basic things. And I want us to be a little bit more mindful about what they're actually capable of and what is required of us to help them become successful, right?
Right. Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for having me back. It's a thrill to be back. It's always awesome to talk to you.
It's so good to see you.
You are like the most, it's just great. It's like you're an amazing person. I love hanging out with you. So
thank you.
So every chance to hang out with you is a good thing. So, you know, I think let's sort of start with the expectations piece, because I think this is such a good point. Mm-hmm. I think there's sort of this, we used to joke that it was the Disney image.
Yeah.
You know, people watch a Disney movie and they're like, oh, all dogs must be like this.
Right.
And I think it's gone way beyond Disney, because we live in this world of social media where you can sort of curate your life.
Yeah.
You're like, here's my puppy being perfect. The one 30-second segment of the day that my puppy was perfect, that's what goes on my Instagram channel.
Yeah.
And the other 23 hours, 59 minutes and 30 seconds doesn't get anywhere near my social media, right? So I think we get this really unrealistic sort of set of expectations. And even when someone shows a puppy doing something like less than perfect on their Instagram or, you know, whatever, TikTok, they do it with this sort of humor where sometimes you forget that, like, it's cute when the puppy chews on your shoes once, but it's not cute the 40th time.
Right.
I think we wind up with all these unrealistic feelings of, oh, everybody else's puppy is so great and they're having a great time and they never get angry with their puppy.
Right. Or frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. They would never yell and they would never like slam the door and shut themselves in the bathroom and like tear their hair out or whatever it is they're doing.
Their own hair out, not their puppy's hair out. Let's just clarify.
Yes, not the puppy's hair. Thank you. Thank you. So, like, I think that where we need to start is with puppies are hard.
Yeah.
They are hard work. They demand a lot of energy. They demand a lot of time. We usually have a lot of other things in our life, and we don't necessarily have, you know, 18 hours a day to dedicate to entertaining our puppy while the puppy is awake. So even beyond the sort of expectations of our puppies, I think we have unrealistic expectations of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I want everyone to start with, is sort of this idea of, like, this is going to be hard, and I'm going to have good days and bad days, and good minutes and bad minutes, and that's normal.
Right.
And you're not a bad person because you don't love every single thing your puppy does.
Right.
And you're not a bad person because you're not doing all of the things that the internet tells you you need to be doing with your puppy.
Right.
So the key is figuring out what the most important things are.
Yeah.
And I'll come back to that in a second, but okay. I do want to say, like, the other thing we all need to remember. So now I've just said, like, don't expect yourself to be some kind of robotic, masterful, perfect thing, because we're human.
Right.
Our puppies are also puppies.
Yeah.
Which means they're babies.
They're really cute, but...
I know, they are. They're so cute. And they don't, like, just like human babies,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
We don't expect human babies to be able to write an essay on Shakespeare's sonnets.
Yes.
And, you know, quietly sit in a chair while we explain something to them or cook dinner. We don't have those expectations.
Right.
But we kind of expect that of puppies. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, you should be able to sit still and stay out of trouble and come when I call you mm-hmm. and lie down the instant I say it mm-hmm. and all these other things, because adult dogs
right.
many times can do those things. Right. But just like an infant can't do the things that a 18-year-old can, your puppy can't do the things that your adult dog can. And even adult dogs, they're not like little adult humans
right.
either.
Right.
So our whole expectation, like, baseline has to be different.
Yeah.
I think. And so we can get, like, deeper into that. But just as a general thought, just remember your puppy is a baby, and you wouldn't expect a 2-year-old to be responsible and not pull things off the shelves. So why do you expect your 4-month-old puppy right. to be responsible and not pull things off the shelves?
Right.
So, which they do, right?
Yeah,
literally.
They really do. Yeah. Everything they can get their hands on. They're very busy. Yeah.
Yes.
Very busy.
Which is totally normal,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. They're just exploring and learning and, you know, all the things. So.
Yeah. And the whole world's so exciting because they've never seen it before.
Right.
So, like, whoa, check it out. A piece of string. This is awesome.
Right.
Hey, a kitchen towel. This is awesome. Oh, this is so neat. I can fit under the couch.
Yeah.
Or like whatever, you know. And then they're under the couch and you're like, how do I get my puppy out of here?
Yeah.
My puppy's stuck under the couch. That's just life with a puppy, because they're exploring and they're curious, and that's great because it teaches them how to be good adults.
Right.
It teaches them about the world, but it can be a little tiring.
Right.
Can
we talk about, like, what we should be expecting, like, in the different phases? Like, because I know, like, you bring a puppy home and he's super cute, and let's say you get a puppy right at, you know, 8 weeks or 8 or 9 weeks, which is what everyone says is the appropriate time. They've had enough, you know, the right amount of time with their mama and their siblings. And so you get them around 8 or 9 weeks. What can we actually expect from a puppy around that age, let's say that to 3 months, right? Or to 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the sort of 2 to 3 month age period, that, like, 8 to 12 week period, things you need to remember are that this is the time when your puppy's brain is most open to the kinds of new experiences you can offer. Mm-hmm. But you have to do it carefully. Mm-hmm. So everyone talks about socialization,
right.
and I do not want to downplay that. Socialization, super, 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 super important. But we can also overwhelm the puppy.
Right.
So you don't want to take your 10-week-old puppy to a fireworks show.
Right.
Like, that's just too much at once.
Right.
You know, maybe you take them to, like, Home Depot and have them ride in the cart, but don't let people walk up and pet them. Because that's, like, can you imagine if you were walking around with your 3-year-old child and every person who came along was like, oh, let
can
me
I snuggle your child. Yeah.
Or yeah. pick up your child or, I mean, like, we let people do things to puppies that we would never allow
right.
with a human child.
Right.
And they're basically little dog childs, right? Little canine children. So we definitely want to get that socialization in, and they're open to that.
Yeah.
But they can also get scared of it. Mm-hmm. So don't expect them to be able to handle everything.
Right.
The ideal is that we're showing them things and they go, oh, that's interesting. And then they move on.
Right.
If they look a little scared, nice thing to focus on. If the puppy's like, ooh, that's a little weird, say, come on back here to me. I'm going to hand you a treat and we're going to handle it together.
Right.
And if the puppy says, you know, I'd like to move like 10 feet farther away, fine, let's move 10 feet farther away.
Right.
Where we break the socialization as humans mm-hmm. is we're like, oh, no, 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 it's fine. Let me drag you to the thing.
Right. Right.
And just because it looks fine to you doesn't mean it looks fine to the puppy. Mm-hmm. So, right from that 8 to 10 week age, I want you to be thinking about what is the animal asking for? What are they comfortable with? Mm-hmm. Read their body language. And if they look a little like, I'm a tiny bit wigged out here, mm-hmm. ease off. Give mm-hmm. them a little bit of space to think. Mm-hmm. The more we can let them choose, oh, I want to step forward and look at that Halloween decoration, mm-hmm. or I'd rather go 20 feet away and look at the fluttering, you know, weird werewolf thing mm-hmm. from a farther distance. Because mm-hmm. we know we're all seeing them, right? It's around Halloween yeah. as we're recording right. this, so we're seeing these things. Just letting them have that distance and the opportunity to look at it where they feel safe. Mm-hmm. Safety is hugely important right. when you're socializing.
Right.
So that's one thing. The other thing is it's a great time when you first get your puppy, you're kind of going to slowly get a feel for their personality. Are they very active? Are they very sleepy? Like if you have a puppy like our friend Doug, he's like, what, 150, 160
he's
pounds?
He's 100 and I think 70 something pounds the last time he was weighed. That's so funny because I was just thinking when you said if they look overwhelmed. And when I first took him to meet to Loki's house across the street and took him to meet Loki, and I think he was probably around 3 or 4 months at the time. I mean, he'd never met any other dogs but his siblings. And so he was this giant marshmallow. At the time, I think he was probably, maybe 30 pounds or something like that, you know, and he just wanted to hide as far as he could into the bushes, because he was like so scared about it. There's a whole new yard. There's other dogs here, you know? So we took it very slow. Yeah. I was just thinking back because I have this picture of him hiding in the, you know, and while we think it's cute, it's really, you know, we're like, oh, it's scary to them. And that those moments can really make an imprint on the rest of their lives. And that's really important. Right. Yeah.
So. And that's why, like, so you brought him to Loki, and we both know Loki, and Loki's a very appropriate dog.
Same age and everything. Dogs. And they were both, but he's just never met any other dogs before. He's like, what is this thing?
Imagine if it were a dog who wasn't great with other dogs.
Yes.
And then, like, sort of rushed at Doug or did something that, like, rolled him over, did something to scare him. Then Doug might think that other dogs were bad for life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's so important too, as we do this, to be like, okay, we're going to set this up so that Doug has a place to escape.
Yeah.
And we know the other dog's not going to like chase him down and randomly bite him for no reason, which I hate to say it, this happens to my clients.
Yeah.
They're like walking down the street and their dog gets attacked by another dog. So, you know,
and oftentimes people will be like, no, my dog is super friendly, you know, not being able to read the sign. So it's not always necessary. Like there's an evil person who's like, you know, with a dog saying, let's say hi, you know, some people do all the proper things and then they do. You just have to be mindful and be like one step ahead, you know?
Yes. And it's extra hard with puppies in a way because puppies, like they have zero social skills. And so they do things that the other dog is like, dude, that was really rude.
Right.
And then
jumping on you and
They react to the rudeness and the puppy's going, oh no, you know, and really panicking, but the adult dog wasn't even being inappropriate.
Right.
So, you know, the person might say, yeah, my dog's good with other dogs and they really are good with other dogs, but just a little too much for that puppy.
Right.
So sort of setting up, especially things like human and dog-dog play dates. Yeah. So like the people you introduce your puppy to should all be people who let the puppy move away when the puppy wants to.
Yeah.
Interact with the puppy in a way that the puppy enjoys.
Yeah.
And every dog is going to be different. So the reason I brought up Doug originally was to say, like, usually these really, really big puppies, they're more chill.
Yeah, he was not.
Because they're so busy growing. They're like, excuse me, I have to go take a nap.
He had a lot of growing to do. He was very lazy. Yeah.
He really
quote unquote
did.
Lazy, but he was literally putting in a lot of work. Yeah.
Exactly. So you might find when you get your puppy, you might find, you know what? My puppy right now is just totally like all they want to do is nap. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like work with what the puppy gives you. Sometimes you'll find that all they want to do is nap for the first 3 days. And then it's like mm-hmm. they've processed. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm at my new home. Mm-hmm. This is so cool. Now let me go eat the electrical cords. And they're like all over the place. So it's a really good time to sort of observe, get to know your puppy, and please, please, please puppy proof.
Yeah. What does that look like for those people who don't know?
Yeah. Great question. Puppy proofing usually for me means that the puppy only has access to a small area.
Okay.
And what I've done is I've made sure that that area is clear of stuff that the puppy can get into or destroy that I care about. So there's two ways to do this. One is I can set up an X pen, which is an exercise pen. It's kind of like a, for those who are not familiar with them, it's like a play pen for children, except that they're made for dogs. You could actually use a child's play pen from any puppy. And it would work just fine. But they're called exercise pens or X pens. And the great thing about an X pen is you can just, they can, they're usually like, I don't know, 30 square feet of space, sometimes a little bit bigger in the floor area. They're like 6x4 or 6x6 kind of things. And you can put like a bed and a crate and some water and some food and some toys and a potty pad in a pee pad holder, because otherwise potty pads are really fun to play with in that area. And your puppy has a little room. And you know that there's nothing in there that they're going to ruin that's not theirs to begin with. And so if they like, their toy, they're tearing up their toy. So,
and they're probably a little too young to tear up their bed at this point.
They're usually, although I'm just going to say there are some really enterprising young puppies out there. Like, let me unstuff my bed one little bit at a time. They're really fun that way. And then you just need to get things that they can't chew through as easily. There are like more chew resistant beds and things like that out there. So that's one option is just, you know what? I'm just going to plop this in the middle of the living room, where everyone's hanging out. Yeah. So when we're watching TV or eating dinner in the dining room, everything is within sight of the puppy because puppies are social and you want them to be able to like get used to you and learn sort of the social stuff. The other option is to say, I'm going to dedicate like the kitchen or the bathroom or something to the puppy. Make sure that there's nothing that puppy could possibly reach that they can get into. And you just put up a baby gate. And so the door is open and the puppy can see out and you walk in and out of the baby gate when you want to interact with the puppy. But that way you don't have to worry about whether you put your shoes away when you walked in the door. Now I'm going to say like the, if you have human children, it's definitely a good idea to set up a really small area because the rest of the house, you're not going to be able to keep. If you're an adult living alone with a dog and you can be really organized, then you can say, you know what, I'm going to let them have access to this area and that area. And I'm just going to make sure I never leave my shoes on the floor. And like maybe you know, you, some people can do that. But the other great thing about a confinement space is it also limits house training accidents because what you cannot expect of an 8-12 week old puppy is that they understand house training. So having them somewhere where if they have an accident, this is why I like kitchens and bathrooms, tile. If they have an accident on the tile, it's easy to clean. If they have an accident on the carpet, it's harder to clean, right? So usually our kitchens and bathrooms don't have hardwood or something that's hard to clean up, like carpet. So those are all sort of things you can do. And then in those areas, you can start introducing the idea of I get my food out of a toy and use food toys, like the classic Kong is the sort of biggest example. Other things you can do at this really young age, hand feed your puppy their meal. It's a great way to form a bond. And you can start introducing them to like, I'm going to put your collar on. I'm going to put a leash on. Even if the vet says you're not allowed to go for walks outside, which the vet might say, at least get them used to here's how your harness goes on. Here's how your leash goes on. And when you're doing those things, distract the puppy with treats. I'm going to hold a treat in one hand and clip the leash with the other one so that the puppy's not biting the leash while I'm putting it on. Because otherwise, they're like into everything. They want to put their teeth on everything. So the key for me in that early, early, early stage is get to know your puppy. Let your puppy decide like what level of interaction they want, especially in the socialization situations. Start creating a bond with your puppy by showing them that you're a safe person to be with and you hand feed them. And if they say, you know, I'd rather walk away right now, you say, fine, fine, walk away. You know, all of those things are going to teach them that you're safe and you're reliable. Start teaching them that like, yes, sometimes food comes in a toy. And start working on house training, which we won't go into because that's like its own podcast. But, you know, just start working on those basics. Honestly, you don't even need to worry about things like sit at this stage.
You ask. just want to learn.
Yeah, it's just like house manners. And their brains are open to all this social input. So let's take advantage of that and do the like bonding and socialization. After they pass 12 weeks of age, they're a little less open to that stuff. So that's when I might start doing, and I'm not saying don't teach your dog sit. Right. You can teach your dog sit. It's right. fine.
Well, I was going to ask, when is it too early? Is there a time that people always ask, like, is it too early to start, quote unquote, training your dog? You know,
it is. The only time it's too early is if the puppy can't hear and see yet because their eyes and ears haven't opened.
Yeah.
That's the only time it's too early. And even then, there are kinds of training you can do. Like, seriously, look into early puppy stimulation.
Okay.
There's a lot of cool stuff out there. But basically, as far as I'm concerned,
yeah.
I don't usually teach really formal things like sit, but I do teach stand still and good things will happen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, sort of basic concepts that I want the puppy to learn.
Yeah.
Like if I'm holding something and you want it, the best way to get it is to keep all four paws on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a concept I can teach, and it's not a word. I don't say a word to them.
Yeah.
They learn that in this situation, when they're bouncing up and down, the thing doesn't arrive. And then they accidentally forget to bounce up and down. They've got four paws on the ground, and I'm like, here's your toy.
Yeah.
Over time, they start to...
So you're rewarding them for being calm, right? Essentially.
Yeah. So that's with that, like, 8 to 12 week puppy range, I'm working on, let's make friends. Let's learn the rules of the house. Like, you know, where to potty, where not to potty, yeah. what to chew on, what not to chew on. A lot of which is just preventing access to the bad chew stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like, just basic calm behavior earns you good stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't need to be like spending 45 minutes a day with my puppy training.
Right.
Just like, as I'm going about my day, oh, look, the puppy's being quiet. You are such a good puppy. Pray,
yeah.
Scratch them under their chin if they like that. Mm-hmm. Hand them a food toy. Like, good things come to puppies who are calm.
Yeah. And that's the key, right?
Yeah. 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 Okay. And if I could get every puppy in the world to learn just that lesson, and I'm just going to say right now, your puppy may have a harder time learning that than someone else's puppy.
Right.
Some puppies are just really, really hyperactive, and they're like, this sitting still thing, I cannot do it.
Yeah.
I just don't get it at all. Exactly. So the sooner you start teaching that lesson, the sooner they'll learn it.
Okay.
Some of them won't learn it until they're a year and a half old.
Yeah.
But the groundwork you lay when they're 8 weeks old will help with that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Then when they hit like the 12 week period, that's when I start doing things like, okay, let's get you walking politely on leash. Let's get you sitting and lying down when I ask. Coming when called, you're already kind of working on throughout the puppy's life because it's about the bond between you.
Mm-hmm.
But I start working on coming when called, like, hey, I'm going to say your name. And if you happen to come over to me, a treat happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care if you come to me or not, but when you do, a treat happens. And the puppy starts to notice, huh? Every time you call my name, if I show up, then a treat happens.
Right.
This is good. Let's do that again.
Right.
So, and then, you know, keep like, just because the dog is 12 weeks old doesn't mean that they've completely gotten out of being able to learn new stuff. Take them to new places, but keep going with those rules of keeping it safe for them.
So when you're taking them to, like, you know, when is the appropriate time? And this may be a question for the veterinarian, but to let them be on the ground in a public space, because you see people, you know, when we say you can take your pup to like Home Depot or something like that, or on errands to give them some sort of exposure to the outside world. We're not saying, you know, put them on the ground and let them walk around on their own, right? We're saying, like, snuggle them and keep them close and safe to yourself, because there's lots of, you know, diseases and viruses and bacteria and all sorts of stuff that they're vulnerable to. So when's a good time for that?
So the good news is, when a puppy hits 16 weeks, they are done with their sort of primary set of vaccinations.
Right.
They're just going to need boosters for the rest of their lives. One of those boosters is a rabies booster, which is super, super, super important.
Yes.
By the way.
Yes.
But so, you know, they'll be like done with all the various vaccines for things like parvovirus and canine distemper, which are really nasty things you don't want your puppy to get. So when you hit that 16 week mark, you can more or less literally hit the ground, not running, because you don't want to run with a puppy that age. You can just hit the ground at that point. Like, this is great. 16 weeks old, you can snuffle around in the grass. You can chew on the tree roots, like right. whatever you want to do, it's all cool. Before that age, you're going to have to sort of follow your veterinarian's guidance yeah. because they'll have a better idea of how good the immunity is. Mm-hmm. Some veterinarians that I know say, just keep them on the sidewalk. Other yeah. veterinarians I know say, keep them in your arms. So the last thing you want, I actually just had a client whose puppy came to her from the breeder with parvovirus. So she had no control over it.
Yeah.
The dog is okay.
Yeah.
Which is just phenomenally, I'm so happy because yeah. it's not a doozy. Always, they yeah. don't, yeah, they don't always wind up okay. So this puppy is okay. Seems to have gotten through it without too much emotional trauma, but you don't want your puppy to go through that. Yeah. So if your vet says, I don't want you, like some of it's about your neighborhood.
Yeah.
How well are all the other dogs in the neighborhood taken care of? Are there a lot of coyotes in the neighborhood who might be getting virus particles and things?
Yeah.
So, but at 16 weeks, assuming that you've done all the proper veterinary care and you've done your various vaccinations mm-hmm. schedule, you should be good to go.
Yeah.
That said, a 16-week-old puppy is still growing and developing and their joints are not strong and their growth plates are not closed. So you don't want to be like taking them on a 3-mile run or something.
Right.
You don't even want to take
a lot of people make, I think even before like a year old though, you want to be mindful, right? Of, and we can get to that, but like of the, and I think I probably made that. Well, my guy was around, he was around 11 months when I got him. So, but yeah, I think I made the mistake of when I first got my guy of taking him on a hike. And it was too hot and it was just too much for him. And he just sat down. It was one of the early dog mom mistakes that I made. But yeah, like he refused to go anymore and he was whining and he was hot. And a kind hiker like walked us back to her car and then she drove us around to my car. It was just like Griffith Park. So it wasn't like a major hike, but it was just too much for him. And I didn't know. Yeah. At the time, I didn't know. So I'm like, oh, I got my dog. We're going to go do all these things together. You know, he's my partner in crime, you know? So I learned my lesson.
And you know what? We all make those mistakes. Yeah. Like if I could fix all the things that I've done wrong with all the dogs in my life, I look back with the knowledge I have now and I'm like, oh my gosh, what
it's
was I thinking?
Constant learning experience. Yeah. It's constant learning. Yeah. So anyway.
But so I will say like to sort of follow up with this. So the general rule is it's one thing if the dog is running around on their own.
Yeah.
And they're like, I feel like running and skipping and jumping. Like that's fine.
Right.
But anytime we're encouraging it or sort of enforcing it, they're on a leash, they have to stay with us, or we're maybe taking them beyond what they can really do because we're so excited about our hike.
Yeah.
That's risky. And what you really want to do is talk to your veterinarian about like, when do my dog's growth plates close?
Right.
Because if you damage those growth plates when they're 4 months old, they'll never grow right.
Right.
Be orthopedic issues for life.
Yeah.
So especially if you have a big dog with like, you know, potential hip issues, like Doug is not a dog I would have taken for a run at a year. Doug is the
Doug would not have gone for a run at a year.
No, that's also true.
Would Doug have go for a run now? He does not go over like 2 miles an hour.
That's also true, which in a way is good because he's forcing us to like keep him healthy. But like the bigger your dog is, the longer it takes for them to finish physically growing.
Yeah.
The bigger your dog is, the longer it takes for them to finish emotionally growing and getting to social maturity. Yeah. So like your tiny dog at a year is kind of an adult.
Yeah.
Giant dog at a year is not remotely an adult.
Interesting.
So, yeah, both physically and sort of emotionally brain developmentally.
They just take longer. And then, they just take longer.
Yeah. So that like 16 weeks is when you can start having fun adventures.
Okay.
And again, make sure that you listen to the pup on like what they want to do and don't want to do.
Yeah.
You may need to up your enrichment game a little, make the challenges a little harder where you're like, okay, this food toy is a little harder, or I'm going to start playing hide and seek with you, or find the treats around the house. Do this with caution because you don't necessarily want them hunting like everywhere in your life all the time. Yeah. I love teaching dogs to look for stuff in boxes. If you do that, make sure that you have a signal that says the game is starting so they don't just rip into every Amazon box you get.
Right.
But Like, you'll get this, there's sort of this nice period between about 16 and 20 weeks when the puppy's like, I sit when you ask, I come when I'm called, I don't get into much trouble, I don't chew on stuff too much anymore, I kind of know how to walk on leash, I'm starting to get it. And you'll be like, yay, I'm done. And then your puppy will hit 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And they'll start teething.
Yeah.
And their brain falls out of their ears. It just tips out.
It's like the teenage years, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
They turn into teenagers, and that teenage phase can last anywhere until they're like 9 months or a year old, or if you have a Labrador Retriever, 2.5 years old. You know, it just, like, they're just, their brains aren't fully formed.
Yeah.
This is just like humans.
Yep.
You know, there's a reason that insurance companies charge more for people under the age of 25.
Yep. They're just not making the best choices during that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have the impulse control. Mm-hmm. It's not your teenage son's fault, and it's not your teenage dog's fault. Mm-hmm. You know, the brain is just not developed there yet. And so you're like, hey, it seems like a really good idea to drop off of a 100-foot cliff with these little wings that I made in the garage.
Yeah.
Because they just don't, they're not capable of thinking through the consequences the way an adult is. And that's entirely true for our puppies.
Right.
So they're going to make all these stupid choices, and then they're going to do that teenage rebellious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you go into the bathroom and you cry and you tear out your own hair.
By the rebellious thing, meaning it appears that they're not listening, or they find many other things much more fascinating than they find you.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for describing that so well. And the thing is that it's not your fault. Yeah. Like, you as a human, I want to let you off the hook.
Yeah.
You did not suddenly become really boring.
Mm-hmm.
But adolescent animals are supposed to, like, go off and make their own life. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the way adolescence works.
Interesting. I know that that's true. Like, in the wild, and I never thought of those things together. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is they're kind of like, okay, well, like, mom, dad, I don't need you anymore. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, whatever you want to call yourself in relation to your dog. Yeah. I don't need you anymore. I'm going to go off and explore and do my own thing with my life.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, if they were in the wild, they would probably hook up with another group of, you know, they'd find another dog to hang out with or whatever it would be. But they don't have that opportunity. So they're mostly just like, mom, dad, I don't want to listen to you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have all these other things I need to be doing. And you are so like yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly that they're being disobedient. It's that they really do have more important things to do. Their brain keeps telling them they have other things to do, and listening to you is not the top priority anymore.
And that's something, and that's what I really wanted to like hone in on, is that it's not necessarily that they're just like they're not being bad dogs. They're just being dogs at that age for the most part. You know what I mean? Or you're not being, or you're not probably being clear on what it is that you need from them also. So
yes. And so the key is, like, when they hit that sort of 5-6 month point and they're falling off the cliff of like, what happened to my puppy? You need to double down on all the things you've been doing.
Yeah.
Like, if you've been hand feeding, keep hand feeding.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been training, keep training, keep doing all the things, because even though their brains are encouraging them to go and explore stuff, they still learn that whatever's fun, they're going to do more of. And if you can training with you fun and hanging out with you fun, then they'll choose to do that a little bit more than they otherwise would have. I mean, they're not going to be the same. Like, it's like children. There's like an age when children are like, I love my human parents, and I'm just going to, you know, spend the human children. I mean, or I'm going to spend all my time, like, everything they say and does,
like,
really
the best
matters to
thing.
Me. And then they outgrow that phase. And you're like, well, my child used to love me and now they don't care. But if you've been a good parent, in the end, they come back to you, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, mom, I still love you.
Right.
So that's kind of what we want to do for our dogs. We want to set this great foundation. And then we're still like, you know what? Chewing on shoes is still not allowed.
Yeah.
And when we walk on leash, I'm just going to wait until you give me a little bit of attention, and then we'll go and we'll sniff in your pace.
Right.
So we do things to make it fun for them to be with us, but we don't say, oh, well, they're not listening anymore, so I'm just going to throw out all the rules and all the things I've been doing.
Right. Right.
You really kind of just, it's more like you double down than anything else.
Right. Absolutely.
And then just like remind yourself, This is normal. This is totally normal. This is just a phase they're going through.
So what are some of the, so those are some of the challenges that we should expect during the 6 to 9 month range, is just a little bit of pushback essentially. So is there a vast difference between that and like 9 to 12 months?
So usually by the time they're hitting like 9 months, their brain is beginning to come back into gear. Mm-hmm. Like you'll have these flashes of, oh, my puppy's really paying attention and my puppy does remember all the stuff.
Yeah.
That we worked on, and you'll have these great moments. And that's a really good time to start. Like, let's say you've been working on Drop It, and Drop It works great at home.
Right.
And it was working okay outside, but then their brains right. kind of went off in the wrong direction. And you might find like at 9 months, you can really start to up your Drop It game.
Right.
You really make it really hard. And they'll be like, hey, this is exciting. And I like a challenge.
Right.
And they'll start to come back to you for the challenge.
Interesting.
So that's kind of where I find that it really depends on the dog,
right.
Every dog is individual, but somewhere around that 9 month range is when I start to see like these little flickers of hope.
Yeah.
Like maybe my dog someday will be really, really well behaved.
Yeah.
Because a month earlier, it's like, they're never going to learn anything. I don't know what happened.
Right.
They were so good 3 months ago.
Right. So when we're talking about like training in our adolescent dogs, like what should we expect from them as far as like the length of time we should be doing training there's only so much information they can take in at one time without feeling either overwhelmed or confused, or they just get sidetracked. So
right.
How should we set them up for success in that way?
It's such a great question. So the first thing I'll say, because I didn't say this before, is throughout life,
yeah.
short training sessions are usually going to get you more stuff than long training sessions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'd rather do like 1 minute of training and then let the puppy go,
right.
whether the puppy is 8 weeks old or 8 months old.
Right.
It's going to be like, do a minute or maybe do 3 quick minutes together, mm-hmm. 5 minutes, and we are done. And you get to go back to doing your normal stuff. And when they're adolescents, what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to set up, give me 1 minute of your focus and we're going to work on this thing. And then I'm going to give you 15 minutes to go back to the thing that you really wanted to do.
Right.
And that's
right.
a really nice basic principle. Like when I teach dogs to come when called, 99% of the time, I'm going to send them back to whatever they were doing.
Yeah.
I'll be like, Fifi, come here. And Fifi comes away from her food toy and comes to me. Fifi gets praise and some treats. And then I say, Fifi, go back and play with your food toy. So it's never like either or.
Right.
It's never, I can go to the human or I can play with my toy. It's, I go to the human and I get treats and I get to go back to my toy.
Right.
And when they're adolescents, you can really harness that, where you can say, you know what? Let's work on polite leash walking for 1 minute.
Right.
Out here, I'm going to like feed you right by my side, make sure that you're doing a really nice job. And then I'm going to say the next 15 minutes, you dog get to decide, do you want to rush over to that bush?
Yeah.
Or under this rock? Or go back to the house? Whatever you want to do, the next 15 minutes, it's you.
Yeah.
So we sort of, and then over time, as they get to be more adult, you can spend a little bit more time walking the way you want
yeah.
and a little less time walking the way they want. But I'll just say, regardless of age, I'm a big fan of letting dogs walk the way they want, because it's one of the rare opportunities that urban dogs have,
yeah.
like get out and have new experiences.
Right. Along in alignment with that, and I know we might not dig too deep into actual training, but when, you know, I've found oftentimes with like little puppies, when you're getting ready to take them out to walk, they just don't want to do it. You know, they get outside and either they feel overwhelmed or they walk 2 feet and get sidetracked. And that often really frustrates people because they're ready to get out and walk with their dog, right? So how can we reel it in a little bit and really hone in on what's best for the dog in that moment, right?
Yeah, this is such a great question, because I could probably, like, if I had a dollar for every person who said to me, my puppy stalls on walks or mm-hmm. stops, won't go anywhere, or they'll only go 4 feet. Like, we would, you and I, Charlotte, together yeah. would be millionaires if we had a dollar for every person who said that.
Or they sometimes, like, they'll start walking and then around that second period, you know, like after like 4 or 6 months, they do it again. They stop. They just don't want to
yes.
go at all, or they don't want to go off of their one block. I have a lot of puppies that won't go won't go where they can't see their home, you know? So it's like, right. Is that, that's a fear related, that's during like another fear period, right?
It probably is, yeah. With a research on the second fear period is, yeah, very shaky.
Interesting. Okay.
But anecdotally,
yeah,
see a fear period in adolescence. Yes. It does come up.
I definitely see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I see it a lot. I definitely see it a lot. And I do think that a lot of that is fear related. It's like an anxiety thing. And you have to think about like, what's the experience dogs are having on a walk, whether they're a 12-week-old who's being allowed to walk on the sidewalk or a 9-month-old who's been walking for months.
Yeah.
They're attached to a human being by a piece of rope.
Right.
I mean, I realize it's not literally rope, but right, that's what, yes, it's like. They don't have options. They, right, kind of have to go where you go. And, right, that in itself is really stressful. And especially the young puppies, they have no idea what they're supposed to be doing, right, on a walk.
Right.
Like if you think about it, this goes back to expectations, right? Our, yeah, human expectations are dogs want to go for a walk. Our puppy's expectations are, I'm outdoors. Wow.
So check out that much tree. Stuff. Yeah.
That leaf fell down. Ooh, there's a worm here. Yeah. And like, not at all about going for a walk. They're right, like, this 5-foot square area.
Yeah.
They're like, this is the most awesome place I've ever been in my, yeah, life. You know? So I think we as humans need to let go of walking our dogs as exercise.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
As human exercise, I mean.
Yes.
Start thinking about it as canine mental exercise.
Okay.
So when you're 8 weeks old and you go outside, just standing still in one place, you're going to get overwhelmed by all the input,
mm-hmm,
let alone if you're walking around, right? And that's one of the reasons you said that. They get overwhelmed. Like, yeah, they'll be like, okay, I just need to process the 50 things that are,
yeah, around. And then a car goes by and then it's just like, whoa, it's like so much.
Yes. And so that's why they're stopping. They're stopping, yeah, because if they move forward, it gets, it's just too much.
Right.
And the adolescent dogs, I think the same kind of thing, these sort of older dogs who go through that possibly fear period, even though we don't have the great research on it, it, yeah, suddenly seems like something's happening and suddenly they're stalling too. They're almost certainly overwhelmed. Usually when a dog stops and freezes, one of two things is happening. Mm-hmm. Either they're really focused, like there's something that they're super focused on and they just cannot move away from what they're focused on,
right,
or they're completely overwhelmed.
Right.
So in those situations, what you want to do as a human is stop and allow them to process.
Yeah.
Give them time to, you know, hey, I'm 4 houses down from my house, but nothing bad is happening. Maybe I can go 5 houses down.
Yeah.
And it's so much of, if we could all do that for our dogs, we would, yes, have so much better outcomes.
Right.
We have this sort of reactivity, fear, when that happens because we're forcing the dogs into situations that they're not comfortable with.
Yep.
So the younger they are, the more we really want to sort of respect their saying, wait, stop. Can we pause here?
Yeah.
And if it's really, really important that you get moving again, try to move in whatever direction the dog wants to go. So if that means they want to go back home,
yeah,
just take them home.
Right.
The other way to think about this for humans is don't think of walks in terms of distance. Think of them in terms of time.
Right.
I have 20 minutes to go out for a walk with my dog. That means for a maximum of 20 minutes, we'll be outside together.
Yeah.
If after 5 minutes, my puppy wants to go home, then we go home after 5 minutes because the other 15 minutes are not going to be beneficial anyway.
Right.
But if my puppy wants to spend 20 minutes sniffing the same tree, then that's our walk.
Yeah.
And then I go home.
Yep. So it's just being mindful in those moments to not force them into something that potentially could have long-term side effects, I guess.
Yeah. And isn't mindfulness something we humans are all striving for?
We're striving for it. Yeah.
We're not doing a very good job, but we're striving for
sometimes
it, right?
We do better than others. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah.
Put down your phone.
Yeah.
I have conversations with puppies. Like they're very one-sided.
Yeah.
But I have conversations with puppies all the time where I'll be like, what is that? What is so interesting in,
yeah,
that bush? Who are you smelling?
Yeah.
And like every once in a while, they look up at me and they smile and they wag and then they go back to whatever they're, yeah, in. And I'm just like, share with the class. Tell, yeah, me what you're sniffing. Of course, they're not going to do it, but it keeps me engaged with the dog.
Yeah.
Instead of disengaged and like thinking about my human, whatever stuff.
Yeah.
Dogs are so good at being in the moment and mindful. Let's let them guide us and help us be in the moment and mindful along with them. And that means I'm watching the dog and paying attention to her body language, mm-hmm. or, you know, what he's sniffing or what is going on that maybe has their attention, you
right.
know?
Right. Absolutely. So, and in alignment also with being mindful to not force them into situations that are super uncomfortable and might be overwhelming or scary. I mean, there are some things like setting them up for success in those younger years, like when it comes to like setting them up for success with the groomer, setting them up for success with the veterinarian. Are there ways, since we're talking specifically about puppies right now, is there ways that we can set up our puppies to have good experiences at the groomer and the veterinarian, like moving forward? Because those are two major things that happen in their lives. And a lot of dogs have a lot of fear around going to the vet and have a lot of fear around going to the groomer, you know? And
yeah,
they got to do it. They got to do it. So
yeah, but it's kind of scary too, right? So we can't say we're not going to do it, but I can also see why the dog's like, this is weird.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what I would think of a blow dryer if I were.
No, it sounds awful.
Like, I don't
yeah.
even like blow dryers as a human, you know? So things we can do. I'm so glad you brought this up. This is great stuff to do in that 8 to 16 week range when they're not yet allowed to be going out and about a lot necessarily.
Right.
So, you know, do things like make a pretend stethoscope or buy a child's pretend stethoscope.
Oh, interesting.
And like put the stethoscope on the puppy and you hand treat, or you get a little like pretend otoscope. Those are the things that they stick in your ear.
Yeah.
And you could even use like a funnel of paper. It doesn't even really matter, but like lift up their ear, right. look in their ear, hand them a treat.
Yeah.
And if they're like, I can't believe you even want to touch my ear, start by teaching them that when I touch your ear, treats happen.
Yep.
When I reach for your ear, if it's too freaky to touch, I'm just going to reach and then treats happen. So you can start teaching them. Think about all the things a veterinarian's going to do.
Yep.
They're going to look at their teeth. Okay, I'm going to look at your teeth and I'm going to hand you a treat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look in your ear and I'm going to hand you a treat. I'm going to pick up your paw and look between your toes and I'm going to I'm going to touch the tip of your tail and I'm going to hand you a treat. You can start doing all those things so that when they get to the vet office, they're not like, this is the weirdest thing that has ever happened to me. That's one thing. Same thing with grooming stuff. Like, you don't actually have to know how to groom your dog.
Right.
you can take scissors and make little scissor noises at a safe distance from your dog.
Interesting.
They hear the scissors go chink, 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 and they get a treat.
Yeah.
They like, if you have like a Dremel tool or some makes that kind of
that's
like
for your nails. Yeah.
Yes. Like that you can just make that noise and they get a treat. Even if you're never going to trim your dog's nails or trim your dog's fur, get them used to the sounds and then get them used to being held.
Yeah.
So I'm all about like, let the dog leave and all of that. But I also need to sort of, for lack of a better word, inoculate them for the times when someone's going to need to hold them still.
Yeah.
So I routinely, with my own dogs, I'll just like grab my adult dogs.
Yeah.
My adult dogs who have all had a chance to learn about this.
Yes.
I just grab them randomly.
Yeah,
with a puppy, I would start not with like the big grab. I would start with, I'm going to put my hand on you. You get a treat. I'm going to put both arms, you know, both hands around you. You get a treat. I'm going to squeeze a little tighter. You get a treat. I'm going to pick you up for a second, put you down. You get a treat. So that when that veterinary staff just like randomly touches them, they say, oh, wait, I bet I'm going to get a treat for this.
Yeah.
And the other thing you can do with vets and groomers is take them to the place, have them meet like 5 people, get a treat from each of the people,
cute.
And then fun vet visits, fun groomer visits.
Where nothing happens. You just go in, you say, hey, what's up? This place. And then you leave.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's going to be like, oh my gosh, your puppy's so cute. So it's super easy to do. With your veterinarian, you'll need to actually make an appointment because you want to like put them up on the table, put them on the scale, you know, those kinds of things. But train your dog to step onto your puppy, to step onto a mat. And then when you go to the vet, you put that mat on the scale, you make sure that they take into account the weight of the mat. And then the puppy steps on it and boom, you've weighed your puppy without any like big fussing or trouble, right? So all of these things, a lot of it, especially with the groomer and the vet, a lot of it is handling. Just get them used to being touched, but teach them that when they're touched, they're going to get paid well for that.
Yep.
And if they say, I don't want you to touch that way, then you say, okay, let me start like 2 feet away from you and slowly build my way to where I can tap you with one finger.
Right.
Other great things to train at this general, like young age is collar grabs. So you just practice tucking your finger under the collar, handing the puppy a treat, or harness grabs. Tuck your fingers under the harness, hand the puppy a treat. And again, if the puppy's like, I can't believe you're doing this, this is awful, then you start way, way, way easy. And maybe you just point your finger at the collar to start, and then you build up from there.
Right.
But think about all the things your puppy's going to have to go through. Crate them, teach them to be comfortable in a crate.
A great tool to have for situations like emergency situations and situations like the vet, right? So, or even the groomer, because some groomers do put them in crates in between grooming sessions. So, yes, let's talk about crate training.
Yeah. So crate training, it's just, I don't know where everyone's listening from, but if you're here in Southern California and there is a disaster, and believe me, there's any number of disasters to choose from that can happen in Southern California. If you have to evacuate, your dog needs to be in a crate. So it's just a basic life skill. So the way I usually teach crates, I do this, I crate train totally like backwards from what most people do. So the way I started is we have the crate exists. I'm going to drop some treats in the crate and I'm going to shut the door with the puppy outside. So now we have a crate with treats inside it that is locked. And that gives the puppy a chance to be like, I think I smell something in there. That's kind of interesting. When you open the door, they're likely to walk in. When they walk in, keep the door open, keep dropping treats in. When they walk out, shut the door, drop a couple extra treats in. And now the door is locked again. And that's where I start all my crate training is you can't get into the crate except when I let you in. And there's always treats in there. So you always want to get in. And from there, you can build to, you walk into the crate when I ask you, and I slowly teach you that I'm going to close the door. I like to tell dogs that I'm about to close the door. I say, I'm closing the door, and then I close the door, and then I hand them a treat, and then I open the door. And the basic rule, because I have so many clients who have puppies who don't want to go in their crate, and I'm always able to turn this around. This is never, it's actually never, I've never had a puppy who could not be retrained. Basically the crate. And the key is they can leave whenever they want to. And once they know they can leave whenever they want to, they stop
wanting to leave. They have a choice. It's all about choice, you guys.
It is. And the more we can give them control and choice over their own lives, the more they're going to be like, you know, I'll do this thing you're asking me to, because I get to do my own thing so much of the time. Veterinarians, groomers, obviously the dogs need to be comfortable in a crate because they will be stuck in a crate at some point. The other things to think about are the smells of those places. So like, just maybe don't ever, ever, ever let your dog lick rubbing alcohol. It's very dangerous. It's really bad. But maybe there's a little container of alcohol in the kitchen while you're making them their food so that the smell of the alcohol just becomes like a normal smell. Or get your hands on some of the sanitizing cleaning agents that the groomers and the veterinarians use, especially the vets. They use like really heavy duty stuff that, you know, just so that you can even ask your vet, like, can I have like a little tiny plastic container of this stuff? Just so that the smell is normal. Now, we're not going to let the dog dip their nose in it or lick it, or we're not going to put it on their body or any of those things, but at least let them get used to the smell.
Just around.
So you've got like the smells and the tools that they're going to encounter, and they get to walk in and out and meet a bunch of people who think the puppy is awesome. And you teach, sometimes they get put on a table and sometimes they get put on a scale. Maybe you teach them a mat for the scale, like I said earlier. There's all of these kinds of things, like start to think creatively. What is life going to be like? What are the things that we have to be able to do? And one of those is I need you to be able to be in a crate while I walk away. Which is where we got back into the
crate. And that's where people give up a lot of the time. Cause I think you know, their puppy will freak out, you know, they can get them in the crate, but then the puppy might freak out, you know, or start digging and barking. And then like the obsessive barking.
So like the walking away from the crate, the two things I'll say, one thing I'll say is some puppies genuinely have separation anxiety. Yes. I'm going to put those puppies aside for the moment, but for the puppies with a normal concern about being left alone. Like, when you leave, it's kind of a big deal. And the reason it's a big deal is because we humans tend to do things in big jumps.
Yeah.
So I'll be like, the puppy's great when I'm standing next to the crate. So now I'm going to go into the next room. Mm-hmm. That's a huge change.
Right.
So I'm going to say, are you okay when I'm a foot away from the crate? That seems to be working. How about I'm 2 feet away and I walk back, and then maybe when it comes time to walk out the door, all of me except for one arm is still in sight. Yeah. And then I slowly get my body out of the way until only one arm is in sight. So the mistake we make most often, and this also goes back to what I was saying about like touching the puppy and starting really easy, is we'll be like, oh, this is going really well. Let's jump to the next step. Yeah. And dogs almost never do well when you jump to the next step. So you need to be thinking in like millimeters, not feet of progress.
So what about having them in the crate and then, you know, you're just going kind of about your business in the room. So you're washing dishes and stuff like that for a little bit. So you go get your laundry, then you bring it back in and you do laundry, like stuff like that. Like instead of like stand, it doesn't mean you have to like stand there and like wait for them to like slowly inch out. Like you just
Yes, but you have to work with the puppy that you have. So some puppies are going to be like, as long as I can see you and you're in the kitchen and you're cooking, we're good.
Yeah.
Other puppies are going to be like, I'm sorry, you're more than 5 feet away and I'm going to start screaming now. So if you have the puppy who starts screaming, then you need to go in those little inches.
Got it.
It never hurts to try a little jump, but if the jump fails, then you go back to the easy stuff. Don't let the dog hang out in the crate crying, because all that's going to do is make them scared of the crate. And then it's going to be harder the next time. So we all get this advice of ignore the puppy if the puppy cries or whatever.
That's actually the old cry it out thing that I was
just the old cry it out thing is terrible advice as a general rule, because really all that's happening is the puppy has learned that they do get left alone and the situation is unsafe. And that's not what I want them to learn. I want them to gain confidence at their own pace, which means if they started crying because I went 6 feet away, I'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, sweetie, I pushed you a little too hard. Let's try that again and we'll do it more gradually. Instead of saying, I'm not going to come back until you stop crying, which is just cementing that fear and that feeling.
What about people who are just like yell quiet, you know, quiet or constantly like yelling quiet at their dogs because a trainer may have told them to do that or, you know, it's kind of some old school training advice, just yelling quiet or like banging on the crate. We don't do that anymore.
No, we don't do that anymore. What I'll tell you is it works in the moment.
Yeah, because it scares them, startles them.
Yeah. But the problem is I don't care what happened in these 5 minutes. Like even if the dog started crying and I went back to the puppy, like fine. That's just these 5 minutes. What I care about is what's going to happen next week and the week after that and the week after that. And if I'm going to need to yell quiet at my puppy every day for the rest of their life, it's not working.
Right. Yeah.
So what I really want to do is do this in a way that works for them. And what that means is, unfortunately, we have to be kind of patient. Mm-hmm. This goes back to the expectations again. Remember that the puppy is a baby.
Yep.
They're probably not going to be house trained until they're at least 6 months old, sometimes older than that. They're not going to be comfortably being left alone for a while. That's all normal.
Yeah.
We wouldn't, like, again, you know, human children take 18 years to get to the point where they're fully independent, although many of them wish they were independent sooner. So don't expect your puppy to be fully independent right away. Right. You just kind of like you took on, and I don't mean this, as a way, like, I'm not trying to make anyone feel guilty, but you took on a puppy. Just sort of deal with sometimes it's going to go really smoothly and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
And if it's not going smoothly, reach out to a professional.
Yeah.
Find a certified professional trainer or behavior consultant. Find someone who's like a graduate of Victoria Stillwell Academy or a certified professional who's been certified by the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers or the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. Dog training, unfortunately, is a Wild West free-for-all.
Yeah.
I could hang out a shingle tomorrow even if I never met a dog before in my life. So when you're having trouble and you're like, wow, I'm totally stuck.
Overwhelmed or frustrated. Yeah.
Yep. And that's actually probably a good time for me to say, and.
Okay. Here's a good time. Let's plug your book.
I have both a book and a membership.
Oh, yeah. You had a membership. Yeah.
People.
Okay.
Yes, because it's I and three other expert trainers who've spent a lot of time with puppies and adult dogs. We want to make sure that every puppy turns out to be, this is our title here, freaking awesome.
Yep.
So we really want you to have the dog of your dreams, but that takes a little bit of guidance sometimes. And it does take a little bit of work on your part of the time, but we also don't want you to feel like you have to work, like I said, 18 hours a day, just because you have a puppy.
Yeah.
So we have a book, it's called Your Puppy and You, a step-by-step guide to raising a freaking awesome dog. So in addition to the book, we also have a membership, and in the membership, you get like live classes. You have a whole community of puppy owners to share stories with, cry on their shoulder if you need to, celebrate your wins together. You get access to me and the three other trainers who run the membership in live Q&As and live classes. And in the Facebook group, we answer questions and stuff. And you can find out more about that at awesomedogproject.com. So we are the freaking awesome dog project. awesomedogproject.com is the place to find us.
That's such a great idea to have that resource. I mean, the book is a fabulous idea, but also to have the resource of the community, of building the community with like-minded puppy owners, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because we want all the dogs to turn out freaking awesome. Yeah. This is our little way of helping to support that.
Right. Well, on that note, Arete, I think we covered a lot.
We did cover a lot. Oh my gosh.
Do you have anything else that you want to add?
Be compassionate and forgiving to yourself, to the other members of your family who are human, and to all the non-human members of your family. By the way, especially if you have an older dog with your puppy, you need to have a lot of compassion for that older dog. Just have fun.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Beru Podcast. This is episode 25, you guys, and I just wanted to extend a huge thank you to everyone who's been listening and supporting the Beru Podcast. And I love feedback. So if you have any ideas on how we can improve the Beru Podcast, topics you'd like to cover, or guests you would love to hear from, or if you have a story of canine companionship that you'd like to share on the podcast, or even just a question for me, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at charlotte@theberu.com. And please don't forget to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, rate us, review us. You can also follow us on Instagram @BeruPet. All right, you guys, let's chat next week.